Thank you very much for joining us. Max had a big award ceremony last night, a board meeting this morning. He's got a son coming home from college tonight, and he made time in his very busy schedule to be with us tonight to tell us a little bit about the partnership and what's going on with public service these days. So Max, thank you. And why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the Partnership for Public Service?
Happy to do so. The best way, you said it, I think the best earlier about what you found most valuable at EPA were the people. And so I'd be remiss not to introduce my colleagues, Georgia and Natalie, who are here and are working on our effort to create connectivity amongst alumni groups and former feds in particular. So please do introduce yourselves to the two of them. I'm also super pleased to see one of my former colleagues here, Rodney, who is at EPN and was a great talent there, and glad to see him staying in the fold in helping federal employees. So if I could, can I ask just like, how many people have heard of the Partnership for Public Service? Show of hands, there we go, yay. So I started it 25 years ago, and the basic concept was 1.5 million nonprofits, all of them focused on very important issues of public interest, but none of them focused on trying to make our government work better to do any of the policy interests that those 1.5 million nonprofits represented. So that was the concept, is we needed to think about the actual institutional operational capacity for our country. We have one tool for collective action as a society that has the imprimatur of the public and taxpayer resources behind it. It's our government. That was the general idea of the organization, and it's been quite the journey since. So we do things like the Service to America Medals, the SAMMES program. The theory is very simple. The public needs to know more about what public servants do, and the public servants themselves need to have a culture of recognition that no organization gets better if all you do is kick it. And we have a lot of institutional capacity designed to find problem, but not answers to the problem, which is not actually good design. And so we needed to rebalance and try to figure out ways to bring up the good work that people are doing that are actually answers to some of the problems.
Okay, very good. So you told us a little bit about the partnership, and you've been there since the very beginning. What drew you to that? And what were some of the early challenges, and how have you seen things grow?
So I'm a big believer not to plan my life. I think that you create best opportunity by doing what's right now, and the future is super unpredictable, and therefore do what's right now and you'll create that future choice. So I did not intend to do the partnership. My career has always been around government, but that has mainly been because the most interesting opportunities were the ones that were in government for me. And at the partnership, I left the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which was my last government job, didn't know what I wanted to do. I went out and I spoke to about 80 people in 3 weeks, getting five people removed from where I started. People would send me to someone to send someone. And I met a gentleman who was concerned about the quality and nature of talent coming into government. And he said, I'll commit $25 million to you if you start up a nonprofit. And I'm like, sounds good. Okay. And that was really, I was off and running, putting it together. His concern was originally getting talent in. I very quickly realized that at the end of the day, that was one piece of the challenge, because if you didn't have a well-managed organization, you could push as much talent into it as you wanted, and you'd lose it right away, and you wouldn't do the good that you were actually trying to do. And so our history as an organization has been largely around understanding that the ecosystem was more and more complex in terms of the parts that we needed to address. So we began with this question of, management of talent, really HR issues. We realized that that's not actually what's in play here. This is a leadership issue. HR supports leaders, but it's leaders who are responsible for making sure the right talent is being brought into an organization and managed effectively. We were focused on the career civil service, and then we realized, hey, actually the political appointees were fundamental to the system. So we began paying attention to them and did our transition work and a whole training regimen for them. And we realized, hey, it's not just the executive branch, it's Congress. And so we've started a lot of work with Congress. And then we were hey, it's not just inside government, it's the American public's understanding of our government, and you need both trustworthy and trusted government. So we began doing more work there. And the latest iteration for us now is, yes, it's federal government, but it's also state and local government. So we've actually started up a whole effort at state and local level in California. We've launched a transition project to help the gubernatorial transition that is taking place right now. And we're, you know, doing leadership development work and talent pipeline work there. And we've got an AI leadership development program that 48 states have participated in. So that's all over in the last year. So this is part of the pivot we've made organizationally.
Very good. It sounds like you haven't had any trouble staying busy.
No, not.
Let me ask, looking back and setting aside the current period of time, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced earlier on in the lifetime of the Partnership for Public Service?
So this is a good moment to talk about that, because I did just have my board meeting today. And the truth is that, like, I'm a lawyer by training and did not come to nonprofit management, honestly. And I mentioned the gentleman I met 25 plus years ago who offered $25 million and told me I never would have to worry about money. He'd take care of that. And then he died. And so I quickly learned as a nonprofit leader that, you know, my primary job was actually trying to raise money, that the ideas were relatively straightforward. The execution was challenging and the resources were profoundly difficult, that it's a double bottom line, that what distinguishes nonprofit management is you do have a mission, you're directed to the mission, but you ain't going anywhere if you don't have the money to be able to hire the team and support the effort. So that has been by far and away the greatest challenge. And we've really had to try to create a field of giving, because it doesn't come naturally to people to give money to an organization that's trying to help our government. Like, it just, this is not something that trips off the tongue for normal philanthropists. And so we really have spent 20 some odd years really growing an understanding in the philanthropic community that this matters. And this last, you know, year plus has been an interesting moment for that as well. So that's certainly one giant challenge. A second, you know, is fundamentally this issue that leaders in our government don't really think about or care about management. And that's a massive challenge. So, like, really trying to figure out how you engage the people who are in charge to mind the store that they were actually hired to mind. But it's not just them. It's the leaders across our entire society. They typically engage with government around their policy interests and not around the institutional capacity that is fundamental to make policy real. So that's a second giant challenge. A third is the challenge of people management. Like, that's one that I've, you know, there are a lot of problems. There are no more important or more difficult challenges than trying to work with people to get them to, especially in resource constrained environments, to work collectively and effectively. And the list goes on from there. But, if you keep me here long enough, I can give you more.
Well, your venture into the nonprofit world reminds me, when I moved from government to nonprofit, the fellow by the name of Richard M. Daley, the mayor of Chicago, we didn't have $25 million, but he said, this is what I want you to do. Figure it out or I'll find somebody else. So that's why that one worked.
That's one management technique.
Yep. Yeah. It was pretty effective for him in running a city. So looking back, what do you consider the biggest success that the partnership has had over these years?
So the easy answer to that is the partnership itself. It's an organization that is filled with extraordinary people. You got a couple of my colleagues here. It's like the proverbial teach a person to fish versus the fish itself. The organization is able to produce all sorts of immense value. One of my, favorite stuff happens, things that I didn't have anything to do with. Like, last night is a great example of it. It was an incredible celebration of public servants in a very, very difficult environment. And it's a set of colleagues that put it together. They, didn't ask for and didn't get my input on much of anything. And they did an amazing job. And that's powerful. So the organization can achieve things that no individual can. And it's exciting to see people work so effectively together. It's, programmatically, I highlighted a few of the things that I think were most significant for us. I do think that the transition work is incredibly important. It's something that has fallen through the cracks. No one's owned it. And you know, how an administration starts is really fundamental to their ability to be successful. And the relationship between that new political team and the team itself and the career workforce is something that I think we've done a lot of work to try to improve, and that has big consequence. The best places to work rankings, likewise, I think has been a real game changer, because I think the political leaders in particular have been able to hide from the impact that they have had and as a managerial class on their organizations, because no one knows. You don't have any other real-time data to judge performance. That I think has been vital. I would say our leadership model, we've developed a model about what leading in the public sector should look like. And it begins and is fundamentally about you're a steward of the public good. Every individual in this room understands that. And none of the leaders of this current administration do. And that's a problem. But having a leadership model, having a North Star, is truly fundamental. I think like the state of California is about to adopt the model for the entire state. So that I think is very powerful. I can go through a bunch of other things, but you know, what is amazing to me is that there's nothing more impactful to the state of our society than the work that you all have done, than the quality and capability of our government to produce for the American people. And it receives so little attention. So I'm hoping we can shift quickly to what we can do about this, because it's easy to get lost in the problem. And the real, you know, I think the real value comes from what we can do to make things better, which I know is what is in everyone's heart here.
Very good. I'm wondering if you could comment maybe briefly on the current status of public service, but maybe even more importantly, what you see for the future.
Yeah, I can do that briefly, might be a challenge. But I will do my best. I'm not telling you anything you don't know already, but there's never been, the metaphor for me is our government has suffered from rust for decades, and now we have an administration that has taken a sledgehammer to it. And rust is not good. Sledgehammer is a lot worse. And you can count the people who were fired or constructively fired, 388,000. You can look at the morale numbers, 7.5% of the workforce saying their leaders engender high degrees of motivation, you know, almost 80% saying they cannot raise a violation of law without fear of retaliation. These are devastating, devastating indictments on the management of our government today, and the public needs to understand it. And so, again, not to admire the problem, but to say what we can do about it, our theory of the change is pretty simple, and that is we need to do everything we can do to stop the harm, and we need to do everything we can do to build a better future. Two parts to this, and they're related. And so what do we do to stop the harm? First and foremost, we try to take care of the people that are still there and how and provide them answers to the questions they have, the support that you indicated you were doing when you had the shutdown, giving them a sense of community and a sense that they're not there alone. Creating robust, not only individual agency alumni organizations, but really activating the former federal workforce itself broadly. We have a government that largely has operated in vertical silos. That's actually a problem programmatically for our government. It needs to operate more as an enterprise. And it's a problem for us to be able to actually make sure the federal voice is more powerful. It can't just simply be in a silo. It needs to actually collaborate and coordinate across the entire architecture of government. And we need to not just design a plan for what comes next, we need to create the conditions for success, and we need to focus on the outcome we want, which is the plan being implemented, not just being designed. And part of that is going to have to deal with some very tricky issues, like how do you deal with the anger, you know, another political team wanting to come in and get retribution, the pendulum swinging the other way. What do you do about with, you know, an existing workforce that may have been selected for reasons that are not actually merit-driven? These are complex questions. And even more important, in my view, is how do we take advantage of the moment to challenge the things that aren't working in the way that we should want them to work that's not an indictment of the past, but a recognition that the world is changing. And frankly, our government has not kept up. And there are going to be some forces like AI that are new. And there are some things that we could have and should have done earlier and that we haven't. And in my view, the reform comes back to this notion of what should leadership look like, this notion of the commitment to the public good. And we have to question the very nature of the leadership model itself. The idea that we not only have 4,000 political appointees, but there are no job qualifications for them. There really are no performance plans. In fact, this administration just got rid of performance plans for Schedule Cs, and there's no evaluation process. So that's a change. Okay, so that's my brief in brief.
For some of the people who have left federal service recently, we are hearing that there have been difficulties in obtaining their retirement benefits. I don't know if that has found its way to your organization or not. We have heard about it from EPA people who have left and have heard that it's occurring to other federal retirees now. Have you heard anything about that? Do you have any advice to what we might be able to do as an organization to help some of those employees, former employees?
Yeah, I mean, so the answer is I have heard that consistently across the board. And I hate to say this, but, you know, unfortunately, that could be anticipated because you don't strip out 388,000 employees in a non-strategic way and not expect that there's going to be substantial operational challenge to the organizations who are also those that remain. Our morale has been, you know, devastated, and there's not going to be a prioritization of it dealing with this. So the more important question is, what can you do about it? Part of this, and this comes more broadly to the question of, you know, what do you do, you know, that I think is really critical here, and that is collect data, tell story, create a political cost for their failure to take care of people. I think, you know, we are in an information war right now. There is a battle over narrative, and we need to understand that, and we need to fight it effectively. And when I say that, I'll come back to the benefit piece, but we live in a society where the American people have fundamentally not understood who their government is. There's a wonderful book that Michael Lewis and a bunch of other writers wrote. The paperback came out 2 days ago. There's a chapter from us in it, the afterword. And it's called Who is Government? And we've been doing research on this for nigh on 7 years. And most Americans, you know, if you ask them, you know, who's the federal government, they would say bickering politicians in Washington. They don't think about the people here or any of the people who are helping them in their community. And we need to change that. And we've started that process. So we actually, in the last couple of days, got some new survey data showing that there's been a 10-point jump in the answer to the question, do you believe that civil servants are working for people like you, to 61% of Americans, and only 27% saying negative, saying that they don't. The number of folks who say that civil servants are competent went up to 65%. That's another over 10-point jump. That is incredibly important. Like, this is the moment to reintroduce the civil service to the American people. And it has to be about them and not us. And that's a difficult transition to make as well. So there are a lot of bad things that have happened to federal employees. We need to translate that into, and this is why it is bad for you, not that it's just bad for the federal employee. And you need to get it out in the channels. You said there are 3,200 members of this organization, and you said 81,000 or something like that years of experience. I would ask you not how many years of experience, but how many people do the 3,200 people know? What are their social networks? And where can they communicate this? And what are their relationships to other trusted networks? Because there is, you know, we've done a lot of work, again, thinking about how do you reach low information or center right, you know, Americans. And the answer is by telling them stories and by going through different channels than mainstream media. So we've had maybe 20,000 stories in mainstream media about our partnership work. Our focus now is on social media, influencers, and trusted messengers. So people in the categories that we need to reach, need to hear this from sources that they go to for information and that they actually trust. And so those 3,200 people are probably members of churches, of, you know, VSOs, of all sorts of other organizations, and they need to be activated to communicate the information if we expect to reach the people who need to hear it. You ask, I'm going to grab my water.
Very good. Oh, it's okay. It doesn't work anyways. Max, you obviously know a great deal about public service in the United States. Have you had an opportunity to look at models in any other country that we might learn from?
I love the question, and I would say other countries and other jurisdictions inside the United States. One of the things we do, a lousy job in the public sector, is actually doing, you know, best practice analysis. And the answer is I have. I will say this, and I give me a moment, because there's people will push back immediately. But I had one of my favorite things I've done in this job is spend about 4 days in Singapore and really dig deep in their system. And tomorrow morning, unfortunately, at 7:30, it's 12 hours difference, I have a call with their head of technology, who used to be the chief of staff to the prime minister. And they do it right. Like, you can make arguments, well, it's not a democracy, it's small, whatever else it is. I don't care. Like, the reality is what they do in government is phenomenal. And they do have an enterprise perspective. They move their talent around, which I think is fundamental to that enterprise perspective. They value public servants. They educate them. It's a vastly different model of approach. And we should be learning from them. And there are a bunch of other countries that are frankly way ahead of us in the way they manage their public sector issues. So lots to be learned from them. You know, we're doing this work in California. They have this pretty nifty platform where they're trying to engage the public in policy conversations. It's called Engage California. I think that's an interesting model for us to be thinking about the federal government. They deployed it first inside the California state government as a way of enabling California state employees to be able to surface their ideas about how things should be managed and et cetera. So there's a lot of learning for us to do. And, you know, it's hard. Like, I appreciate inside, you know, agencies, the emphasis is on delivery of service and the program, and not a lot of investment in, you know, trying to make it better. Now, I think so the answer is lots of interesting stuff in the world. We're trying to set up like an advisory group for us that pulls on some of that expertise from other places, because, you know, now's the moment for us to do it.
Well, I have had the luxury and the privilege of asking all of these questions. I'm going to ask one more, and then if people have questions that they've written on cards, please pass them to the side. And I do remember that Peter will be the leadoff questioner from Environmental Protection Network. But the last question...
You may need to come up here.
Yeah. We'll give it a try. Yeah. But Max, you've informed us a great deal about public service and the partnership. I'm wondering what advice you would provide to young people who are considering a future in public service.
So I will answer your question, but I want to offer as the old lawyer in me, sort of a challenge to one of the, I think, the fundamental issues here. And that is, when I told you we started, the gentleman who gave the $25 million was very concerned about getting young people into government. And, you know, we did what, you know, is the normal intuitive thing, which is we went out, created a whole network of universities to try to raise the profile of government service and to get more young people involved. What I have learned 25 years doing this from a management perspective is that is not actually what we need to do. The real challenge of getting young people into our government starts with the fact that there's no demand signal from government itself. The fundamental challenge to changing the makeup of the workforce is that our government itself isn't looking for young people. And unless and until leaders in our government say this is the priority and we need them and makes the investment to make it happen, you can excite as many young people as you want, and it's the proverbial pushing on a string. You ain't going to make any progress. So there are four things that have to happen. We need leaders to actually care about, prioritize getting young people into our government. We need to have managers who are going to retain the young people that do come because they're specially trained to actually provide work environments that are going to excite and interest them. We need processes that are going to assess and recruit them effectively, bringing them in. And a lot of that is about having the most basic thing, which is student internship programs. Every other organization outside of the public sector uses that as the primary means of bringing young people in. And I've been involved in the government in doing that. When I was at the Justice Department, we started a paralegal program that any law firm in this country would see as, well, no shit, excuse my language, that's how you do it. And that was done, you know, 20, whatever it is, 6 years ago, started in the antitrust division. It is now spread to half the components in our government. I'm like, what the heck? Like, this is, it's been unbelievably successful, and yet it still has not been adopted. That's one of the big lessons I've learned, is that piloting doesn't work in the federal government. The scaling question is actually much more fundamental. But then, so leadership, good management, good processes, and then you need excited talent. So you can't just start with the last thing, or else you ain't going to go very far. It's not going to make the difference that you want. So thinking about it holistically in that way is truly fundamental. You said, what is it that we should be telling young people? And the reality is that young people, there are more young people who want to come into government already that we're not taking advantage of. And so I would be focusing my energy and efforts on explaining to the American people why they should care about the nature of their government, why what is happening right now is bad, and why we're not, you know, that there's a better path, that there is a way to create a more responsive government that's going to answer their concerns in a much better way than they're experiencing today. And that's where I think the most important energy needs to go.
Excellent, Max. Just a moment before we go to questions, I want everyone to recognize the outstanding presentation that Max has provided and just the excellent insight. So let's give him a round of applause.
I think you're the one who deserves the applause for the 50 plus years and the leadership of this organization. What you're doing here as a volunteer organization, we need this. Like, this is the moment to don't let this guy go. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of interns, this what had been a young fellow came out to Chicago as a presidential management intern, and I took him out and ran him around the lakefront a few times, and here he is, a big shot at the Environmental Protection Network. So Peter Murchie has an opening question from the audience for you.
If I may, you didn't allow it, Dave, but we need to recognize you. I was an intern, and you mentored me because you were also a servant leader. And you are a great model for everybody that I know worked with you and now at the Environmental Protection Agency, the Alumni Network. So I really want to take a moment and thank you for your leadership. So I'm Peter Murchie with the Environmental Protection Network. Max, what you laid out is amazing. I know you recognize this. You all recognize this. That network you all have is really important. And one of the things that we've been doing with the Alumni Association is partnering, building relationships, supporting folks that are still there, supporting folks that left, but also to bring them in and know they have a community. And I want to just recognize that that's one of the most valuable things that we're doing, EPN and the Alumni Association together, because it creates a space for activity. Whether you want to be mentoring people formally or informally, if you want to go out and tell the story as an authentic messenger. So my question for you is, we're two organizations that are growing our programs to support civil service, to support civil servants, to support the agency. This collective space you're talking about of the enterprise of federal organizations that are like us, are there opportunities that we're maybe not taking advantage of in that enterprise space of what others are doing that you're seeing out there that we should pay attention to and get involved in or work on that collaboration that so we're all in this together?
Yeah. And, it's a wonderful question. And I think we all should be doing our very best to learn and adjust. This is an unprecedented world we're in right now. So anyone that says, hey, that, you know, this is the formula is easy to do, it's not. Like, I think there, in my view, there's some clear objectives, but like how we get there ain't easy. And we should be, you know, continually getting better at doing it. You're already part of something that we've tried to create, which is a learning community of the different alumni groups. I mentioned to you earlier, you know, your work in this group is, and EPA more broadly, is much more mature in this work than most agencies, like almost any other agency. And I think, I actually shouldn't say that because I'm just speculating as to why that might be. It's possible that, you know, just to be blunt about it, that EPA has been on the front lines of challenge for, you know, for a long time. The issue is less about the why. I'm hoping to meet this person at some point. So, but not right now. But in any event, though, I don't have a good answer. Like, it's not like, here are the three things that you should do other than to talk to Georgia. Like, that's to learn with us and help us. Like, you know, there is no, you know, I'm going to date myself, yellow pages for all the different alumni groups here. So like we are surfacing them through word of mouth and through personal relationships. So helping us find, you know, who else is out there. A lot of new groups that are setting up because there's a national security division, you know, of the Department of Justice. That does not come to them naturally to but they've set up an organization because they, like everyone else, is getting crushed. So and I know just because I know the guy, you know, who runs it. But that's so helping us collectively identify who else is out there and bringing them together. We hope to, you know, over time create toolkits and things like that so we can have more formalized learning. And, you know, we're doing stuff around training people to go the Hill. I'm sure you've been doing that for a long period of time. But again, you know, there's probably more power if we create a shared agenda. So like, here are the three things that we want rather than having 12 different groups go up disparately asking for different things. Like, so it's really about collective action and really understanding how to mobilize against the tools of influence that we need to do. And I think there's also a lot of need around storytelling. Like, storytelling is incredibly important. And, you know, EPA is an agency that has a footprint, you know, across the entire country. We got to get, you know, the DC stuff is not meaningful, like in terms of communicating to the public that we need to actually reach. So getting stories from community is going to be important.
Bruce?
Yeah. We assume that the future EPA is never going to look like the old EPA because we've lost an awful lot of expertise over the last year or so. So how do we go about envisioning a new EPA? Of course, that same question could be asked about other technically oriented agencies as well.
So we are involved in a project that we're calling Government for a New Era, which is honestly the our priority organizationally. We're doing a lot of different things. This is our priority. And we're trying to answer that question over time. We do not have a lot of time. As I noted earlier, it's ultimately not about developing simply a plan, but it's trying to create the conditions for success. The most important condition for success is a public that cares. So the narrative battle piece is fundamental. And then an outcome, which is the plan actually being adopted and executed effectively. And that requires congressional support. It requires candidates on the campaign trail that are actually making commitments about this so that they prioritize it when they win. It requires having access to the kind of talent that we're going to ultimately need. This is a really important investment that we collectively need to make to be able to get there. I think we have to think about this, like your question about, like, we need to look at other models. I think we're also entering bluntly a world where AI is going to change the necessary footprint
for organizations to deliver, especially with, you know, expertise. You know, this is a maybe a little sideline, but one of the things that is mind-blowing for me is that, like, I grew up in a world, we all grew up in a world where we succeeded on the fact that intelligence was scarce. And I'm not, I think AI presents a lot of challenges, but it also creates a world in which intelligence is abundant. And managing that is going to be really tricky and challenging, and it's going to create a lot of disruptions that may be really deeply problematic for our society. But it also presents an opportunity for us to think about how we can rebuild government in a different way too. And we're going to need to do that. Like, I think whatever world we're going into, I'm hoping it's one where we are able to reestablish the primacy of the public good as the purpose of our government, and a nonpartisan expert civil service as the primary instrument of achieving that. But the resource base is not going to be, you know, what it has been historically. And we are going to be required to think differently about how we get the outcomes that we want. I think part of it is going to be focusing on how to make our government much more customer-centered and to be perceived as customer-centered, which it is not today. I think it's going to be a lot about figuring out what kind of internal process is actually counterproductive, unnecessary, and can be gotten rid of. It's a lot. And it's going to start with, really, really capable leaders who do not need to be subject matter experts. They need to be really effective organizational change leaders. And I think that's part of what we need to rethink in our model here. And we're going to need to think about what the relationship is between, I'm not a big believer in physical reorganization. I think that you've all probably been through it a gazillion times. It becomes an immense distraction. So how do we create the kind of efficiency and connectivity and relationship of talent and culture that doesn't require moving around the boxes? So it's not a complete answer, but I'm just giving you some broader thoughts.
And very good thoughts. Question from the chat with the virtual community.
Wondering what aspects
not on.
You say it and I will repeat it. Okay.
Current require national service. So many young folks are just disenchanted, and I'm thinking if U.S. combined military or civic service, think AmeriCorps would be fantastic between high school and college.
Yeah. So the question is about national service and what I think about that as a possibility for addressing, you know, some of the issues that we have as a society. I actually have been involved in national service conversations since like when I was 16 years old, and I was part of a Ford Foundation National Commission, and I was the student rep for that. And I won't tell you my age, but since then I've pretty much had the same thought, which is we're barking up the wrong tree. And I just trying to be realistic about this. It's a powerful concept without the resources that our society is going to ever commit to doing it at the scale that people have, you know, been talking about. So I do not think it's a plausible answer in the world we're in today, with the following caveat. Number one is that I feel like the important thing for us to do is think about the places where there are already resource commitments where you can activate young people. And so public sector is one of those. There are lots of jobs. We need more young people in them, but it's not a service requirement that everybody, you know, between high school and college or after college spends a year or 2 years doing things. But here's my idea, and really going off script, which I'm plugging in every corner that I can that's slightly different. I actually think there's a window of possibility that, again, it's the resource question. Can we get the AI companies that are, in fact, their work is going to displace a ton of entry jobs to invest today in providing service opportunities for the cohort of people that their technology is going to displace in a way to meet their deep brand problem that they have as companies? And so I'm sidelining trying to do that. I think it's a super long shot, but I think that it's the right thing for them to do and the right thing for our society as well. But honestly, in my view, and this is just me talking, I would not be spending a lot of energy on like the Big Sky National Service piece. It's been a conversation we've had for decades and decades, and it ain't gone anywhere, and it ain't going to go anywhere now. Like, we have such other bigger problems to actually mess with that I wouldn't spend a lot of energy. That's my answer. So,
Bruce.
Okay. Recently, there have been many changes in the rules governing the civil service, not very good ones, and more changes may be coming. What changes do you think may be good and which are harmful? In other words, what are the things going on these days that are really harming civil service, but what ideas can be put forward that would really benefit civil service?
So, I actually am hoping that next week I'll put out a piece on this. I write for The Contrarian. This version of this question. This administration, especially OPM, has adopted some number of the reforms that we have pushed for a long time. So things like challenging degree requirements, focusing on trying to recruit young talent and more tech-savvy talent. And I think the context is missing. We talked about this earlier. You can't recruit new young people into an organization that has, deep, deep morale problems and expect that you're doing any good for yourself. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, all you're doing is actually going to chase that talent away once they, if you ever get them to arrive. You can't do that. We had, the PMF program, the PMI program, they stopped the PMI program. They stopped, 18F, they stopped the USDS, So I think you got to recognize the context that we're operating in. So in principle, some of the things that they're reforming are good ideas, but without the context, they're not any more good ideas. And it's worrisome. It's also worrisome in my view that, they're going backwards on things like getting rid of performance plans that were really like, process and not real, like really substantive for Schedule C, but at least the process existed for that to occur. So I'm being like a realist here, which is, I don't think in the administration in its current incarnation is doing anything that is actually good. And the reality is, in the with respect to these issues, I mean, it starts with the fact that they don't respect the civil service, the purpose of the civil service, or the fact that it being nonpartisan and expert is core to its DNA. And you got to have that before any of these changes really matter. The hiring changes they've made are enabling them to hire loyalists rather than the nonpartisan folks that we and merit-based people that we need. And we need people to be speaking up about this and explaining why it matters. So it's not an inside baseball abstract proposition. So I don't, it's always important to be constructive. I'd love to have a relationship with this administration that actually made things better, but you have to deal with those underlying issues or you're not doing it.
One last question, I hope a brief one.
It's my problem is the answering. Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
The association's Half Century of Progress project does a good job of capturing major accomplishments and acknowledges remaining challenges. Though completed for the 2020 50th anniversary, much of it still could we make further outreach with these reports as a foundation? One high school in Georgia has asked me, this is from Bob Whalen, one high school in Georgia has asked me to teach based on the water report 8 times in the last 6 years.
Is this the famous Bob Whalen who does the weekly, I was going to encourage that person to continue, but whatever. Yes. I mean, like anything you can repurpose is faster than building something new. Like, I think this is true actually in government as well. Like, so this comes back to an earlier proposition. we are much better off repurposing existing infrastructure than trying to create something brand new. It's just always true. And I would say that that is the case here. If you produce something that helps explain why EPA has changed the life for folks, yeah, you know, figure out how to, you know, slap a new coat of paint on it and bring it back. But remember, you know, that I've been doing the Sammys for 25 years and we've gotten nominations. The starting point is what has been the impact for some particular constituency outside of the government, like for the American people? And how do you explain that your work so that you can do it in those terms? Like, that to me is absolutely vital. That is the only thing that makes a difference. And ideally, it's not just like a data thing. It has some story affiliated with it. People that are in their community, et cetera. So thank you. I'm going to go see my son, who hopefully is home now and may not want to see me, but that's a different proposition. But yeah.
Yeah, Max, thank you so much.
All right.
Right there.